opinions of Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman don't reflect the views of Gal Media. Parental discretion is advised. KFNC Mont Belvieu, Houston, a Gal Media station.
My friends are degenerates, but I never change them.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from MGM Grand in Las Vegas for Wilder versus Fury 2. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz, hour number two, 713-780. ESPN's your number, 713-780-3776. If you wish to text the show, there's also Twitter at Fred Fowler, F-A-O-U-R, at A.J. is the real, at Juggalo underscore Trey 48, at the producer Nick. You can also text the show. You know the number for that. And if you miss the first hour, pretty sportsy. A little football talk, a little boxing talk. That's about it. And two really strong burps from AJ.
Yeah. Second one, it actually hurt.
And a little Vegas talk, too, because we're out here in Las Vegas at the beautiful MGM Grand for Wilder Fury 2. Cannot wait.
Kenny says it used to be my mom's job to turn people away with the wrong credentials at Toyota Center. At one point, she had to deal with a very irate former Rockets player, Mike James, because she wouldn't let him through without credentials.
One of my favorite things I ever saw was spring training one year when Durker was doing radio, and he didn't have his credential on him, and there's some old man in Kissimmee wouldn't let him in.
Oh, that's great.
And he went to the Do You Know Who I Am card, and he's like, "Nah, I just know you need to have your credential." And there was a lot of profanity coming out of Mr. Durker's mouth.
That's beautiful.
And finally somebody came up and told the guy who he was. He's like, "I'm not letting him in without a credential."
Yesterday, when they had the cold cuts out, they brought lunch. They catered lunch here. And there was a guy whose job was to make sure that only people with pink and blue credentials ate. So there were some people in line with different colored credentials. And imagine having to be that dude and just be like, "Hey, man, sorry, this is only for pink and blue credentials. You're not allowed to eat this food."
That's kind of rough.
That's a crappy job.
Yeah, and honestly, if you can get in here, you should be able to.
You should be able to, yeah.
713 asks, any idea why guys like Skip and Max Kellerman, et cetera, are so damn popular? I don't get it.
Because they get people talking.
Well, and we've talked about this. This is what our society is, right? It's become a society of this or that, you know, of you believe one thing and you're completely wrong if you don't believe it. And sports has hit on this. Politics has followed along. But sports hit on this a long time ago. It's why Stephen A. and those guys got so popular.
Yep.
They have very strong takes. I'm not going to say necessarily opinions because I don't know that they really believe that sometimes. But they're the kind of takes that get people talking. And that's why this stupid Astros thing won't go away, is because it's made for people like that. It really is. The whole incident is designed for people like that to be able to scream at the top of their lungs and have hot takes on it and piss people off.
Yeah.
That's why so many people still care about it. And why I still get the same texts over and over about, you know, "Well, what about this? What about this?" It's like, dudes, it's over. You know, let's move on. But I do think they're you know, good for them.
They've made something of it.
They have made something of it, and I would never be critical of that in a million years. It's not for me, but that's okay. They've made a nice life for themselves, and they've made themselves very popular. So,
I wanted to discuss for some people, may have been a bad beat last night.
Yeah?
And curious your thoughts, because to me, this reeks of knowing the number.
Right.
Gonzaga played San Francisco, the University of San Francisco, last night. And Gonzaga was 16.5-point favorites.
Okay.
It was not a great start for Gonzaga. They were down 9 at halftime. And you may be thinking, boy, if you're giving 16.5 points,
that's not a good place to be.
Down 9 at half. Some quick math here. You need 26 points to cover that, a 26-point edge in the second half to cover that. Well, The lead disappeared. Gonzaga takes the lead, works the lead up to 14. They call a timeout with 2 seconds left. 1 second left on the shot clock. And they've got an inbound play. And, again, you're up 14. You could just dribble, take the take the 24-second violation or the shot clock violation, right, and give the ball over and win by 14 points. No, they run an out-of-bounds play that gets a man open in the corner, fires up a three at the buzzer, splash.
Boom.
They win by 17 after being down 9 at half on a 16.5-point spread. So the fact that they ran that, they called timeout and then ran that play, what are the odds? It is a what are the odds Friday.
It always is.
What are the odds they knew exactly what the spread was?
Percent 1,000.
I mean, because there's
and
no...
And I'm okay with that.
There's no other reason you run that play there, a three-point play.
I'm okay with that, though.
In that situation.
If I wish more teams cared about the point spread, frankly.
Well, because, I mean, really, who's... you have to assume that people who support your program are invested in it in that way.
Well, especially college football.
Yeah.
And a lot of those big boosters love to bet. And so, yeah.
Thanks for smart.
Yeah, well... people asking for hockey plays. Minnesota, Edmonton, over 5.5 tonight.
Oh, that's the play I was going to give out.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Jared says, what are the odds? Max Kellerman and Stephen A. Smith are the sports versions of Trump saying outlandish things to get everyone talking about them. If you're going to make a comparison, I would say Trump is the political version of Stephen A.
Yeah.
They started it. So... those guys were, yeah, they were here first. Okay, so we were talking about the numbers for knockouts. So let's say you got $100 to bet.
Okay.
You bet $100 that the fight goes under 11 rounds.
Oh, excuse me.
You win $100. That's three already, and it's only 507. 307 out here.
Thank you.
Just to clarify. So Deontay Wilder... by KO, TKO, or DQ, plus 125.
Okay.
Tyson Fury by KO, TKO, or DQ, plus 500.
Which
so
it tells
your
you,
thought is bet $50 on both instead of 100 on the...
split your bet. And honestly, I mean, with those numbers, I would probably split my bet 60-40 to the Wilder side because... if the Fury side hits, it's going to pay off so much more that, you know, at least that way, if the Wilder side hits, you get a little more juice for your money. So, if you're betting $100, I would bet 60 on Wilder to win by, you know, or inside the distance at plus 125, and 40 on Fury to win inside the distance at plus 500, because that pays 200 if it wins. And the on the other side, if you put down 60, you're getting what? I mean,
you're getting back
90 bucks.
Yeah, roughly.
I mean, so I don't know. To me, that's what makes sense.
Yeah, I might just say, you know what? I'm going to take Fury by knockout and just go that way at plus 500 and put my 100
maybe
that
so.
Way. The other one that's interesting, I don't think they almost give Wilder no shot of winning by decision. Plus 1,100.
I mean, that most people believe if the fight is going to end, that it's going to be Wilder who ends it. You know, I think most people don't see Tyson Fury winning this fight by knockout. That's probably the least heard thing that's been buzzing around here. I've heard a lot of, I think the fight looks exactly like the last fight. I think Fury grinds him out this time, and I've heard Wilder catches him this time and he doesn't get up. I haven't heard a lot of Fury knocks Wilder in the next week.
Yeah, yeah. Although I
think it's possible.
I do too.
And I think plus 500 is a good number for it.
The other thing is, if you think if the really low number here is Fury by decision. It's only plus 175.
Yeah.
So they, I mean, the way Vegas is looking at this is if it goes the distance, Fury's going to win.
Well, that's another way of, I guess, sort of hedging your bets. If you were to say, if you think that if the fight goes a distance, Fury wins, you can get plus money on that. If you think the fight ends inside the distance and you think Wilder does it, you can get plus money on that. There's good ways to attack this where it's going to be hard for you to lose money.
Agreed. Some of the weird prop bets. Will Donald Trump congratulate the winner on Twitter?
No.
Yes is plus 550. No is minus 800.
No. The white guy's not American and the American's black. There's no way he congratulates him publicly.
So minus 800.
Yeah.
The winner was tremendous. He was the best. There were good and bad people on both sides.
Yeah.
It's a good thing, not a bad thing. Sad. Who will bleed first?
Fury.
Fury's minus 500.
He had that big cut in his last fight.
Yeah. Odds it. Does Fury wear a Golden Knight jersey during walkout? No is minus 2,000.
I'll go no.
Will the fighters touch gloves before the fight?
I'll go yes.
Minus 2,000. Total knockdowns in the fight, over 1.5, minus 120, under 1.5, minus 120.
Over.
So you think there'll be two knockdowns?
I think there will be two knockdowns.
Yeah. The money line currently, Wilder minus 130, Fury plus 100.
I love it that there's a – I mean, it just seems so rare that we come out here and there's such a closely lined fight.
Yeah.
I mean, this is good. I'm so stoked for tomorrow.
The under is now 10.5 minus 105.
Okay.
Now, the one I saw was here at the casino. It was even money for under 11. So I don't know if that's changed. So somebody says the weigh-in looks crazy packed.
It is. I mean, it's jammed.
I'm
telling you guys, the buzz for this fight is greater than it's been for, like, the. To me, the biggest fight we've been out here for in the last couple of years was Canelo Golovkin.
I would say the first one, yeah.
This is way bigger than that. Like, the vibe of it is way bigger.
Yeah, I mean, I think this feels like a Conor McGregor fight.
It really does.
And not just because there's a bunch of white people with accents here.
Yeah.
But it's the buzz, the people around the casino wearing Fury stuff. I haven't seen anything like this in a while. Now, Manny and Canelo, there's always a huge following and people wearing their stuff. I don't even think those guys compare to what I've seen.
We didn't even ask Trey who he thinks is going to win.
I'm going to Alabama Hammer.
Okay.
All right.
By knockout, Trey?
Yeah, he's going to knock him out with 2 seconds left in the 12th round.
Oh, my. That's a bold prediction.
Wow.
It's going to be a buzzer beater.
Okay.
So here's what you can do. You can go to MyBookie and bet Deontay Wilder wins in round 12, plus 3,300.
Man, that's a long shot odds.
That means if you bet $10, Trey, they'd give you 330.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. Imagine what you could do with that.
Probably get some new hats.
Yeah.
Get some new shirts for bad bands.
Yeah, especially.
Maybe buy some vinyl.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right, we are going to take a very quick break. Don't go anywhere. It is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from MGM Grand in Las Vegas for Wilder versus Fury 2. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
All right, joined now on The Blitz by one of the legends of the game. Hell, we've been out here to see him fight before. Most recently, I think the last time we were out here was for the second Kovalev fight. Andre Ward joins us on the program. Andre, how you doing these days?
I'm wonderful. I'm working.
That's
as
great.
I should be. We're trying to make this fight as big as it possibly can and get it to as many eyeballs as possible. But Fox, ESPN, we come together. Great collaboration, and we're all doing our part to get this out to the masses.
When this fight the first time, for whatever reason, it didn't have this buzz going into it. Maybe the reason why it's got so much buzz is because the first fight was so competitive. But this is the biggest the fight's felt
especially a heavyweight fight in a long, long time.
As long as I can remember. Like, I remember, you know, Lewis and Mike Tyson. I remember Lewis and Holyfield. I remember all of those big fights. But it was one guy in his prime and one guy a little past his prime. Well, that's not the case in this situation. Both guys are right smack dab in the biggest earning place of their careers. They both are as famous as they've ever been, as rich as they've ever been, and they're both in their prime. So I can't remember the last time we've had a heavyweight fight where both guys were in this position.
I said maybe the older Klitschko brother against Lennox Lewis when they were both undefeated and Klitschko got cut.
But Vitaly didn't really have the cachet. He wasn't a star at that point. That fight, that controversial fight, kind of made him. Propelled him to have a bigger name. Staples Center, L.A. But prior to that, he didn't have the name.
Well, Tyson Fury, I think with the first fight, maybe they brought him in thinking that he was going to be a walkthrough fight for Deontay, and it turns out that this guy's pretty good too. And now he's further removed from the time that he took away.
Yep.
He's in prime shape. Do you expect to see a better Tyson Fury this time around?
I would hope so. You know, all indications are that he's going to be better. He doesn't have the long layoff. He's been active. He's had not just two more fights since the first fight, but two more training camps. He did sustain a cut, so that's working against him. But he's just in a better place in his life, it seems like. His mental health seems to be good. I'm sure, you know, maybe everything isn't perfect, but he's in a better place going into this fight than he was back in December against Deontay Wilder in 2018. And I asked Tyson Fury yesterday at the production meeting, I said, tell me about the difference between the first camp when you were going to fight Wilder and then the second camp. He said, listen, you can ask my brother. He's sitting right there. It was a terrible camp. We did a lot of moving around. We had one sparring partner. My mindset and my confidence was there, but I wasn't all the way there physically. He said, this fight in this training camp is a lot different. He said, if Deontay Wilder couldn't beat me in the type of shape I was in physically and mentally back then, there's no way he can beat me now.
Does the fight that Deontay just had with Ortiz where, I mean, let's face it, he was losing every round up until he knocks him out.
One punch.
Is that maybe a blueprint for Tyson Fury? I mean, had he not gotten knocked down in the last fight, we're not even having this fight.
I don't think Fury needs the Ortiz blueprint because he fought him 12 rounds. So I think the blueprint is the first fight. And to be honest, like, rematches are about takeaways and adjustments, right? Like, as an individual fighter, I fight you 12 rounds. I got to be honest with my takeaways. Yo, he kept hitting me with that right hand. Why? Man, I was able to get him to the body. I was hurting him to the body. There's good takeaways, bad takeaways. The bad takeaways allow you to make the adjustment to be better in the second fight. I don't know if Wilder feels like he needs to make adjustments, because when you're a born puncher like him, it's kind of hard to explore other things about your style, because this is what you live and die by, the big punch. So that's going to be the difference, and you're going to see that play out. What were the big takeaways for each guy, and what were the adjustments that needed to get made?
Well, speak to your experience. When you fought Kovalev the second time, what did you adjust? Because you had much more success in the second fight.
I think the mistake I made in the first fight with Kovalev didn't necessarily stem from the fight per se. It was more the training camp. You know, I kind of got caught up in the moving up in weight thing, wanting to look the part, and I kind of bulked a little bit. My trainer and my godfather, Virgil, he was against it. He was like, listen, son, you're big enough, you're strong enough, stay loose, stay supple. I didn't listen. So I found myself, I looked good, I felt strong, but I was in quicksand. You know, I kind of was stationary. And against a guy like Sergey Kovalev, who's as sharp and as quick as him, you find yourself getting hit with shots you shouldn't get hit with, hence the second round in our fight. So the second fight, training camp, I went back to my roots, got my spring back in my legs, and I focused more on speed than power, and we saw the difference.
Does Deontay make any adjustments from the first fight, in your opinion, or is he just what he is?
I don't want to say he's just what he is. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt that he and his team, and he has a great team over there, Mark Breland, former gold medalist, one of the greatest amateurs of all time, and former world title holder, as well as his other coach, Jay. I'm assuming, right, that they have taken one or two things from the first fight and tried to employ them in training camp. And I believe one thing that I'm hearing is the jab. Trying to disguise the big right hand, trying to disguise the power. Now, if he listens or not, that's a whole other story. But if he can pick his left hand up and blind Tyson Fury where Tyson doesn't see that right hand coming, then kudos to Deontay Wilder. That could be the difference between the win and the loss.
The great Andre Ward has been our guest. You got a prediction in what happens here?
I don't.
No prediction.
And you know what? I'm content with that.
That's cool.
All week long, I've been having pressure put on me to have a prediction. And this fight is too nip and tuck on paper. Obviously, we saw that in the first fight. That's why we had a split draw. There's nothing polarizing about either guy. I haven't heard anything in an interview. I haven't seen anything in the training footage that would tell me that this guy is going to win that fight. But that's a beautiful thing. That lets us know that we have a true mega fight. We have a fight that's worth your price of admission, that's worth your pay-per-view buy. My job is to present the facts, make a case and an argument for both guys, and then step back and let it be great.
Tyson, when we interviewed him last week, Tyson said because he didn't win the first fight, he's changed his strategy. He says he's going to be aggressive. He's hunting the knockout to make sure the judges don't take it from him this time. Is that a good idea or a bad idea when you're fighting Deontay Wilder?
On the surface, it sounds like a bad idea, but if you scratch a little bit deeper, it's really not that good. You get a guy like Deontay Wilder, he's used to pressing forward at all times, right? Every fighter has the thing that they do well and the thing that they really would rather just stay away from, right? Wilder doesn't want to go backwards. Now, there's danger in being in the lion's den, but if you can have the courage to step to a dude like that, press him and make him fight in a way that he's uncomfortable, Deontay Wilder has an 83-inch reach. What happens when you cut that in half and all of a sudden you're inside, now he can't get that off? It's not crazy, but it is dangerous. And at the end of the night, one or two things are going to happen. If Tyson Fury employs that style, he's either going to be called crazy or crazy as a fox.
Well, because Wilder has that really wide stance, he keeps that right hand so far back. Is that? I mean, would getting in inside his reach, would that be disadvantageous to Deontay if somebody cuts in on
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. But if you really watch the first fight, Tyson Fury did that.
Late, he did that.
He did it throughout the course of the fight. I'll give you an example. His perimeter game along the ropes, and when he was trying to avoid shots, he would dance, get out the way, and then he would circle back and attack Deontay. Deontay had no answers. So what I'm assuming that what Fury's telling us is that you're going to see more of that. He didn't just dance around the ring on that. He had moments where he attacked Wilder, and that's when he had his most success.
Andre Ward's been our guest. Appreciate the time, champ, and we'll talk to you after the fight, man. Thanks.
Ward, always good to sit down with the champ. Appreciate his time, as always. And I got to tell you about Allstate. Allstate Siding Windows. Listen, if you're heating or cooling your home, and if you're in Houston, you've probably done both in the last 2 weeks. You've probably heated and cooled your home. You could be letting money flow out your window, because if your windows are old, they're aluminum, they may have drafts. Well, here's the deal. Allstate Siding and Windows will come out. Free inspection. Check them for drafts. That's a free window inspection. Zero American dollars it'll cost you. Plus, 30% off all window packages. $2,500 for all full siding jobs. Family owned and operated for over 45 years. Military discounts, senior discounts available. For the best rate, you call Allstate. Allstate Siding and Windows. Give them a call today. 832-204-1936. Or you check them out online. AllstateSidingAndWindows.com. That's 832-204-1936 or AllstateSidingAndWindows.com for Allstate Siding and Windows.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from MGM Grand in Las Vegas for Wilder versus Fury 2. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we're back on the Blitz.
Trey keeps calling me, huh?
Well, you know, there's clearly a connection there.
What's up, Trey?
What's up, man?
You're not that way, right?
Nope. Don't swing that way. Sorry.
Okay. I thought so. But then you keep calling me hot, so I didn't know if you changed your mind.
Well, I got to say the mics are hot.
Oh, mics are hot.
Yeah.
Okay. Who's Mike? I'm a little jealous.
Mike Golick?
Nope. Yeah. Nope. Definitely not my cup of tea.
Okay. You like them smaller?
I think so, yeah. That would be the end goal, wouldn't it?
I mean, I guess so.
Yeah.
I guess so, but maybe you catch a guy like Mike Golick while he's heavy and he's got low self-esteem, and then he loses weight, and now all of a sudden, you got yourself a winner.
I guess, yeah. Yeah, I guess that would be the way.
Oh, boy.
Maybe he was talking about Mike's Skinner.
No. Yeah.
Mike Greenberg might be more up your alley.
I don't know. I'm not into dudes, so I couldn't really judge.
Okay. But he doesn't really look like a dude, so.
Mike Greenberg, I got to Google him. Let me Google him.
You'd like him. He's right up your alley. Have you seen the latest names to pop up in the Colorado coaching search?
I saw Eric Bieniemy popped up in that search, and then apparently popped out of that search, and then they said, well, maybe he didn't withdraw all the way from this. So I don't know what the latest is, but it seems like there's a lot of confusion whether Eric Bieniemy's in or possibly in or possibly out.
Yeah, everything I've seen says he's out, along with Steve Sarkisian, apparently was a serious candidate. He's out. Brett Bielema is still in the mix. Air Force coach Troy Calhoun still in the mix. The interim coach, Darren Ciavarini, is in the mix. And then two new names that I'd be curious
about. June Jones.
No, but.
He's coaching the 2-0 Roughnecks.
How about Graham Harrell?
Okay.
Same offense, basically.
Yeah.
And Oklahoma defensive coordinator Alex Grinch.
Okay.
Are both.
What kind of a job is Colorado to you now? Like, where does it rank in big-time college football coaching?
I probably think more highly of it than most people because I think that'd be a cool place to live.
Certainly.
But
as far as, like, I mean, let's face it, Tuscaloosa, Alabama is never a cool place to live, but that's a pretty good job.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's hard to say. I think they're kind of in that mix with the Arizona schools and Washington State. They're just kind of – they can be good for a year or two. But I don't think we're ever going to get back to them competing for national titles.
I was going to say, but they've also won a national championship in my lifetime.
But what were you, two or three?
No, they won it in the, like, 1990 or something like that.
Yeah, you were like two or three.
No, I was like 10. I was, okay. You know, of,
same thing.
I was of the age where I cared about sports and was watching.
Well, they split a title, right?
I think they won outright against, they beat Notre Dame.
Yeah, was that the five down year?
That was, I want to say, Rushon Salam was.
Yeah, that
the,
was the, that was the game that they got five downs. They should have lost. It was 1990. Yeah,
but they are the national champions from that year, right?
Indeed, they are.
Yeah, don't you try to take that away from them.
Well, there was a split title around there at some point. Like one team won the one team won AP and one won UPI.
Oh, okay.
So I don't remember if it was them and Clemson or what.
Well, I don't know either, but I'm,
nope, I was right. National title was split with Georgia Tech.
In 1990?
Yep.
Okay. Better job now, Colorado or Georgia Tech?
Colorado.
I think so, too. But I don't know where I rank Colorado. It feels like a place where they don't prioritize sports that much.
Yeah.
But it's in a power conference. It's in a good place to live. I mean, it's definitely got some appeal.
So Georgia Tech won the UPI coaches poll. Colorado won the Associated Press poll that year.
Okay.
The largest arguments against Colorado were that they had a loss and a tie, whereas Georgia Tech had a tie and no losses, and Colorado's unfair win in the fifth down game against Missouri. Now, that loss, as I recall, was against who the hell did they lose to? But I thought they had a punt return for a touchdown called back on like in the fourth quarter.
So they got jobbed on one, too?
Yeah. I think so.
Equal jobbing.
But Colorado beat Texas, Washington, Oklahoma, and Nebraska that year.
There you have it.
7-0 in the Big 8 Conference.
If I'm Eric Bieniemy, I would consider it.
It was Notre Dame who had the punt return. It was Rocket Ismail.
Oh, okay. So it was in the championship
game, and Colorado won 10-9, but they had a holding call on that play, and that was the difference in the game.
If I were him, if I were Bieniemy, I would consider it strongly because I think there's not much more he could have done at the NFL level to get offered an NFL head coaching gig, and he didn't get one, which to me says he needs to do something else. And if he has success at the college level, it's got to come. But, I mean, he's probably also looking at it and saying, you know what, if I take the job at Colorado and I fail – then all, you know, it all goes away, everything I've worked for.
Yeah, he's going to get an NFL offer at some point.
If he's, as long as he's attached to Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, he's going to have some success coaching offense. So somebody eventually is going to say, hey, we need you. So that's it's an interesting thing to weigh out. But I don't know. I think there's pros and cons to it. I could see him wanting to wait, but I could also see him saying, this is my chance to run something.
Well, I just think it comes down to, do you want to be an NFL head coach or do you want to be a college head coach?
Yeah.
Because I think if he wants
two
that
totally
job,
different jobs.
And if he wants that job, he should be able to get it, I would think. And we've talked about this before. Having a job at a college can be a better gig than an NFL job.
Can be, although I don't know if Colorado
is
like that.
But it's, I mean, Can you be more successful there than you could with the Cleveland Browns? Probably.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. But it doesn't sound like he wants that. And yeah, fine. I mean, somebody will hire him next year. I don't think he'll go another year without a job, especially we know how fast coaches get turned over. And, yeah, so if I'm him and I want an NFL job, I think I just wait it out. But it's got to be appealing to coach at your alma mater, too.
Yeah.
And you're also going to get a little more room, I think, than most guys would because of that, to go ahead and not be successful early. But I think they'd be good under him. I think the guy can coach, and I'd like to see him get a chance, whether it's there or in the NFL. But Graham Harrell's an interesting one because his star has really risen fast from OC at North Texas to OC at USC to potential NFL jobs after 1 year and to now this. So that's a guy whose star is really on the rise.
And that's the kind of offense that will play. I mean, if you're a team like Colorado that's not getting top-tier talent, you can still succeed.
Well, yeah. And that's
because it's a gimmicky thing that other teams are going to have to prepare specifically for.
Right, and that's that offense can be a great equalizer if it's run right.
Yep.
And USC's offense was a lot better last year.
It was very good. And that was with people hurt. If USC's offense had been healthy last year, they could – USC legit could have been good last year, but they just had some bad injury luck and some pretty poor defense. But their offense was legit.
And that's probably why they kept Clay Helton around for another year.
I guess.
But we shall see. But I think that he's a really interesting – to me, he's a very interesting candidate for somebody as well. And but, again, he's moved up so fast. And, boy, North Texas wasn't very good without him last year. So, and they had their quarterback back and everything. So that's usually a sign that a guy's a good coach.
Yeah.
When you leave a place and they're not better and the place you go to is instantly better, I like that. And it's a fast track, but maybe he's ready for it. I mean, and if you're Colorado, would you rather do that or would you hire Alex Grinch, who's a good defensive coach?
I don't know if I want Alex Grinch.
Yeah, I think maybe they look at it as, well, let's build a great defense and be that kind of team and be successful that way. I think I'm always pro-offense when it comes to hiring a coach. Go get a guy who you know can put up some points and make him hire a really good defensive coordinator. MacDaddy says, hope you guys aren't staying at Mandalay Bay. Apparently MGM got hacked, exposing 10 million users' data.
I don't know. We're staying at MGM.
We're at MGM, but it's the same system, so that's not good. Yeah, because Mandalay is part of the M Life family here.
Yeah.
So, interesting. 713-780-ESPN is the number if you want to text the show. 713-780-3776 live here from the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. Juggalo Trey doing a great job back in studio keeping us on air.
Thank you, sir.
Nick Sharara also out here with us, the producer Nick on Twitter, and he's also doing a great job. It's always always fun to come out here and do these fights, and it's always great to have Nick with us because he's a good dude. Nick is good people. He's a made guy. So I know that hurts Joel's feelings that he's not a made guy, but it's like I explained to him, it's like Donnie Brasco. There's a friend of mine, and then there's a friend of ours. Nick is a friend of ours.
Yeah.
And he's got to work. Yeah, it's hard to work your way up to friend of ours. We don't have a lot of made guys. You know, you want it to be something that's and what I don't think Joel realizes is that how far back Nick and I go to when Nick was one of the 23 producers I had on my Saturday night show way back in the day on the Fred Fowler show on Yahoo Sports Radio. And, I mean, there were some really talented dudes that produced that show, and then there were some real donkeys. Nick was not one of the donkeys. Nick was a good one. Nick and Timmy B, I think, were the two best. And, but yeah, it was – I mean, I don't remember how long I did that show. Maybe a year, maybe 2 years.
You were so famous then.
But
– you would barely even look me in the eye because I wasn't one of your – I wasn't on your level.
Well, it's, you weren't network.
That's right.
You were just a local guy. Like RJ likes to say, you're just local. You're good for local, but – but, yeah, it was I mean, the show is actually reasonably popular, especially for some reason in Hawaii. We used to get calls from Hawaii all the time. And it wasn't the same guy. It was like, you know, there were three or four people in Hawaii actually listening. But, yeah, Nick, I think Nick maybe was there for about a month doing the show. And that was the problem. Anybody good got taken away from me.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'm not lying that I had 23 producers during that stretch. And then the bad ones, I couldn't get rid of. So, although eventually there were a couple of them that actually got fired, so they got rid of themselves. All right. Quick break. Don't go anywhere. It's the Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
This is the Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from MGM Grand in Las Vegas for Wilder versus Fury 2. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz, live at the MGM Grand here in beautiful Las Vegas as we get you ready for Wilder Fury 2. And, hey, guys, undefeated heavyweights battle for the world title. As Deontay Bronze Bomber Wilder squares off against Tyson the Gypsy King Fury 2. ESPN 97.5 wants to give one lucky winner an autographed glove signed by each fighter. Head to our ESPN 97.5 Twitter page, find, like, and retweet the boxing glove post for your chance to win. And don't miss Wilder versus Fury live on Saturday only on
pay-per-view. It's got to be a good one.
All right, let's do the Zadok Jewelers Gem of the Day.
The gem of the day, it's the gem of the day, the Zadok Jeweler gem of the day.
All right, we have a sex robot update.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, researchers are saying that as sex robots become more sophisticated, that it poses more psychological and moral dilemmas for their owners.
Okay, that makes sense.
Christine Hendren of Duke University said some robots are programmed to protest to create a rape scenario.
Oh, no.
Some are designed to look like children.
Oh,
one developer of these in Japan is a self-confessed pedophile who says that this device keeps him from ever hurting a real child.
I'm against that.
All right, can I just start with these people are just weirds.
If you're a self-confessed pedophile, I feel like you should just be in jail.
Yeah.
Like, since when is that, like, oh, I'm a pedophile, no
big
deal.
I mean, I think...
That guy should just go to jail.
I think this guy wants to be a pedophile, but he doesn't do it because he has a sex robot.
So he's a non-active pedophile. So
yeah, like a pedophile.
In his mind, he's a pedophile. God, that's almost worse. Because he's out there living a normal life and wanting to do bad things to children. Like, I don't even know that guy's name, and I hate him.
He's Japanese, so...
I hate him. Not because he's Japanese, I just want that to be clear, but because he's a pedophile.
A high-quality sex robot, which can retail from $8,000 to $10,000, can remember things as well as develop and understand its owner's likes and dislikes. Sounds good to me. I don't know what the problem is, except for robot ethicist Kathleen Richardson. All right, to me, this is like an ancient astronaut theorist, right? A robot ethicist?
Yeah.
How do you get that title?
Hard work, Fred.
Really?
Degrees, extra degrees.
Oh, so she has a degree in robot ethics.
Yes.
Wow.
She's very well educated.
She says, these companies are saying, you don't have a friendship? You don't have a life partner? Don't worry, we can create a robot girlfriend for you. A relationship with a girlfriend is based on intimacy, attachment, and reciprocity. These are things that can't be replicated by machines. All right. Maybe... I'm a little different here, but I would not want my sex robot for intimacy, attachment, and reciprocity.
You just want it for sex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hence the name, sex robot. Now, I don't know where that makes me fall on the robot ethics scale.
You don't score well, I can tell you that.
Well, I don't want one that, you know, resists or pretends to resist. It kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah.
And I don't want one that looks like a little kid. And I kind of think I'm the target demographic for a sex robot. Not these weirdos. But,
Okay, yeah. You spit, like, act like you're different than these weirdos.
Well, I very specifically said why. And I don't know that the people they're talking about, I don't know if there's a bunch of them out there. I think this woman is mad that robots are replacing women.
Could be.
And
she's a hater.
I'm just, that's just the impression I get. Regardless, that is your Zadok Jewelers Gem of the Day.
The Gem of the Day. It's the Gem of the Day. The Zadok Jeweler Gem of the Day.
Apparently, there was the annual meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science in Seattle, and sex robots were a topic there.
All right.
So,
how much have you seen about this? Like, Sean Salisbury made a video about this kid who got bullied, allegedly, and it's all over the internet. People have raised a ton of money for him. And then you go to his Instagram, and he's wearing Gucci shirts and flashing around giant handfuls of money and supposedly drinking wine. And I don't know. I want to believe in, the good of humanity, but I think we collectively as a group got scammed by this guy yesterday, this kid.
I didn't see it. I mean, I saw Sean's tweet, but I didn't really pay any attention to it. So I didn't really know what was going on. But I don't know if I'm just cynical in my old age, but I kind of feel like almost everything's a scam. It's hard, especially online. It's hard for me to trust anybody these days.
Yeah.
And maybe that's wrong, but, I didn't.
Most people are seeming to think now that he's finessed Twitter, is what they're saying. And in the words of Raheel, he found a way to finesse the game. His mom did, anyway. And they're getting a bunch of money from GoFundMes. Although, again, judging by his Instagram, they ain't hurting for money. And apparently this isn't the first time this has happened. This same mom has done this before a couple years back, and it went semi-viral.
Let's quit calling it finessing and call it what it is. It's conning.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, you're basically conning people out of their money. And I'm against that. And it also sort of deflects from people who really need money for stuff like that. But that's
And then people said, "Well, just because he's rich doesn't mean he's not bullied, and he could be bullied, or he could also be 18." I don't really know. That's the thing about that dwarfism. Like, there's a lot of people who look like they're 10 years old,
right?
That are actually grown ass men.
Maybe that's who that Japanese guy should be calling.
Well,
no. I don't know. I said I don't know enough about it, but it sounds to me like it's a scam. And if that's what they're doing.
And I feel bad for, like, Sean, literally. I watched his video yesterday, and he's like, saying, you're a cool kid. I want to take you to a ball game. Let me know who your favorite team is. We're going to get somebody to sign something for you. And it makes me feel sick that if this dude is scamming people based on, working on people's emotions, because that's tough.
Well, that's the worst kind of scam artist.
Yep.
I mean, that's what they do. And people like that will prey on the good. And I hate people who prey on the good nature of others.
Yeah.
Because people want to help. And they see something like that, and they want to make a difference and feel like, hey, we're all in this together. And that's what con men take advantage of. It's like Jim Baker selling $300.
Yeah, food buckets.
Well, now he's selling water for $300 that allegedly cures the coronavirus.
Right. Silver water or something.
But there are people who, he's preying on their beliefs. And I think it's criminal. And frankly, what this guy did or his mother sounds criminal. And, if that's the case, shame on him. And I've been scammed by people before too. And I'm more skeptical than most.
Yep.
But yeah, I just I don't know, man. I think it sucks. That's all. And I feel bad that because I'm sure Sean feels bad because he's out there pushing this, and turns out he got scammed.
Yeah.
And he's a guy with a good-natured heart, and that's I hate people who, you know what? You know, in my power rankings of people I hate, I think these guys are probably right about fourth.
Okay.
Behind murderer, child molester, domestic abuser.
Okay. About seat recliner?
That's a different thing because it's not an actual crime. But on the scale, it's second, right?
Okay.
It's basically pedophile.
Okay.
Seat recliners on an airplane are the equivalents of pedophiles in crime.
All right,
we're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. It is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.